None of it makes sense. All of a sudden, everybody, every child in Iran, the excuses they've given have ranged from this one committed suicide, this one had a pre-existing condition, a young boy just a few days ago was shot with bullets, with live ammunition, and died as a result. The story that they told the public was he was bitten by a dog and he got infected from that dog bite and he didn't get it treated and he perished. I mean, if it wasn't so enraging and infuriating and absolutely absurd, it's comical.
This week on Hereafter, Iranian-American actor and writer Nazanin Noor on the protests unfolding in Iran, grief in the Iranian global community, and how the whole world has the power to fight for women, life, and freedom. Please stay tuned for this one, everybody. We will be right back after this first break.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Before we get started, one quick note. While we cover a lot of emotional, relational territory in each and every episode, this show is not a substitute for skilled support with a licensed mental health provider or for professional supervision related to your work. Hey friends, today's episode is really special, and I want everyone to hear it. And you might have seen news stories or social media posts about the protests in Iran. I know I've been sharing about it a lot on Instagram and on Twitter. Now, we get into what's actually happening in Iran during my conversation with today's guests, but I want to tell you why we're talking about it today. Now, one reason, as you will hear in the show, is that talking about the protests, talking about the revolution helps. Global knowledge and global pressure helps support and encourage Iranians fighting for their rights, and it pushes national and global governments to take action. The second reason we're talking about this today is that grief is at the root of these protests. Grief is at the root of these protests. Mahsa Amini was killed by Iran's morality police because of the way she wore her hijab. Her death unleashed a wave of protests against the brutal oppression women have endured for decades under the Islamic Republic. As more people are beaten and killed by the morality police during these protests, family members aren't allowed to identify their bodies, bury their dead, or gather together to mourn. And as you'll hear in the show, there's also deep grief for those Iranians who live outside of Iran, watching their people, often their friends and their family members, fight and die for their rights. In news stories, on The Ellen Show, in magazine essays, and on social media, Iranian-American writer and actor Nazanin Noor calls for feminists around the world to stand with Iranian women as they fight for their liberties. And she joins me today to talk about the power of global attention and the ways that both rage and mourning are deeply entwined in Persian culture. Nazanin, welcome to the show. I am thrilled that you're here.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. Okay, so there are two things that I want to do here together today. One is help people understand what's happening in Iran right now and why it's essential to keep talking about it. And the second thing, I would really love to talk about the ways that grief and mourning intersect with what's unfolding in Iran, specifically or maybe especially for the Iranian diaspora. I'm going to say that like 19 different ways in our conversation today, but no one cares. No one's going to be listening to me anyway. So to get us started, can you help us understand what these protests are about?
Sure. So in a nutshell, it started around a little over 4 weeks ago. So there was a young woman named Mahsa Jina Amini. She's Iranian Kurdish woman. And she was arrested by the and detained by the morality police in Iran for improper hijab, because Iran is ruled as a theocracy ever since the Islamic Revolution of 1979. So hijab, a head covering and a way a woman dressed, became mandatory under Islamic Republic's law. So there's these, they've changed names over the years, and for the last 10 or so years, they've been called the morality police, the Gashta Ershad. So what they do is they patrol and they look for people who aren't dressed modestly. The severity will kind of ebb and flow over the years, depending on who's actually president or who's in charge or what arbitrary reasons of when they want to crack down and not. But the main point is that women do not have equality and freedom there. They don't have the bodily autonomy and the choice to wear or dress however they want. So this young woman got stopped, she got detained. And according to witnesses that were in the patrol van with her, as well as her family, her brother that witnessed some of this attack on her, she was beaten in the head with a baton and her head was bashed against the side of the morality police van. So they took her to where they take a lot of women who get stopped for this type of thing. It's like a re-education center, they call it. And while she was there, there's CCTV footage that showed her fainting. She slipped into a coma and she died 2 days later. So this sparked these protests in Iran. And it's not just her death or the forced hijab that is being protested. It quickly evolved into anti-government sentiment. Now, these protests have happened many times before in Iran, these movements, these uprisings. Just even in the last 10 to 12 years, we've seen 5 or 6 of them of note. What happens is it's kind of the same playbook where the Islamic Republic sends in their police forces, they crack down severely, protesters are killed, detained unlawfully, indicted on trumped up charges, taken to prison, and they kind of get stopped after a couple weeks. This one is actually has gained momentum and it's continuing to move forward. We're seeing strikes from workers in the nation as well, students at universities, some teachers that are joining their students as well. So it's a sustained uprising and movement that we've been seeing, which is huge. And also the support from the international community has been growing. More people are talking about it. We still need more media coverage, but there are more eyes on Iran right now as these things continue. And, you know, children are being killed as well. We have teenagers. Amnesty International released a report just a couple days ago that have confirmed 23 children. These are children that are either beaten to death by the regime forces or shot with bullets. And the reasons that the regime is giving to the public through state-affiliated media are, oh, well, this one committed suicide, this one had a pre-existing condition, and it's obviously clearly lies. The parents have come out and spoken out against the regime's lies, but families get threatened all the time into silence. They don't allow people to mourn properly, so they take the bodies. People can't even bury their loved ones properly. So this whole movement now is, it's not just about mandatory or forced hijab, which is how it started. It's being led by women as well. Of course, the men have been side by side and have joined them, but it really kind of started as this feminist uprising of, we want equality, give us our bodily autonomy. And also we want freedom. We don't want to live under a theocracy. We don't want your forced religion. Everyone should be able to practice what they want, but your beliefs should not be forced onto me. So it turned into, as it always does, where we hear slogans of death to the dictator, death to the regime. They just want this government gone.
Yeah. And as you said, like, this is not new. And as I sort of listen to what you're saying, and also the little bit that I know about the history of revolution and revolt for Iran, like, I have this image in my head of like this concrete reinforced giant set of doors and the will of the people and the will of women and the rights of women. Like, a battering ram hits that every few years and cracks it a little bit and cracks it a little bit and cracks it a little bit. And what we seem to be, what I hope we're seeing now, is the splintering of those doors.
That's a great analogy. It is. It's all these little cracks that have been forming, and it's just getting wider and wider. And as I've told you before privately, the support from the global community means a lot to Iranians inside of Iran, because it shows them that people are finally listening. For many years, they have been living under this oppressive, repressive regime, and they have felt like the international community has turned a blind eye to what they're suffering under. And this time it feels different. This time we feel the support of others, people from other countries and religions and ethnic backgrounds that are actually standing side by side with the Iranian women and the Iranian people. So, you know, I'm hoping that this time is different and that those cracks continue to become bigger and bigger until the whole system gets knocked down.
Yeah, I mean, this is a practice of, or a process of, like, turning the spotlight on things. You know, that one of the tactics of the Islamic Republic is to shut off internet access. Right. And shutting off internet access shuts off the observer, right? This is, I mean, we'll just use a tiny microcosm for an example here, everybody. But, like, I bet we all know or have experienced domestic violence or child abuse in the home with sort of upstanding members of the society. The parents are, like, held up as these amazing people. But what happens behind closed doors is where all of the violence erupts and abuse. And for Iran, under this leadership is really the wrong word here, but under right. this regime, those doors are often closed. And if people start to kind of get wind of my analogy gets a little wonky here, but, like, if people start to get wind of what's actually happening, the response of the abuser, the response of the regime, is to stop looking at this. There's nothing to see here. Move along. This
or
is
tell
private.
You it's all fine. No,
it's all fine.
One time. It's not going to happen again.
No big deal. Right. We're on the UN Women's Council. Like, all is well. No big deal. Nothing to see. Move along. Go focus on something else. Leave us alone. And what's happening with attention from the world outside of Iran, like, not letting those blinds close, not letting those doors get shut, not letting things happen in secrecy and in silence anymore.
And I think a lot of Iranians too are been very frustrated, not just inside of Iran, but in the diaspora communities, because the reporting on the goings on inside of Iran haven't always painted the full picture of what's happening. And so a lot of people are fed up and frustrated and want the world to see what the Islamic Republic has done and is capable of doing and continues to do. And that's why I think it's so important for us to talk about it. And, you know, it does feel, to go to your analogy, of course, as an Iranian American, you hate the fact that the country, your motherland, the country your family and your parents and your ancestors come from, is associated with these people that have done such horrible things. And it's like, you don't want people to conflate the Islamic Republic with the people of Iran. So I know some people might have had hesitation. Maybe I've in the past haven't been as vocal because you're already represented so negatively in the media that you don't want to add to that. I know I've heard that from a lot of people in diaspora, but you get to a certain point where you're like, this is the reality. We are not the Islamic Republic. We are Iran. We are Iranians. The Islamic Republic is not us, and they don't represent us. And now is the time to expose everything they've been doing, report on it accurately. So hopefully the world can also, world leaders, world powers can actually take effective action.
Yeah, and really identify with the people of Iran, mm-hmm. not this regime of a handful of very violent, oppressive dictators.
Yeah.
I want to go back to the spark for this. We're going to link to your Instagram and all of those things. But the reason that I know you is because I was following you anyway and then started seeing all of this stuff about the protests and sharing it. And one of the posts that you wrote, as Iranians recognize a 2-day period of mourning for Mahsa Amini, the young girl who was murdered by the morality police for improper hijab, Iranians have taken to the streets in protest. These protests are a form of mourning. I get choked up because I was watching a bunch of videos before we started, and they're really fucking emotional, right? Like,
yeah,
it's hard to live it, yes, and it's also hard to be witnessing it, because if we're watching it, we have to feel what that is like. We have to feel that pain and that suffering and that mourning. More than me having a sidetrack into getting weepy, because welcome to my world, I do it all the time. I love that these protests are a form of mourning, right? And that outrage is an act of grief in a way.
That's where the hair cutting stems from as well. It's an
Tell me about that.
Tradition.
Yeah.
It's an ancient Persian tradition, and it's referenced in the Shahnameh, which is this epic from many years ago that was written. The cutting of the hair, it's not only a form of mourning and grief, it's also an act of protest. Mm. And that became one of the biggest symbols right now associated with this movement, which is why you see people doing it. There's a whole movement, I believe it's called You've Got Mail, where people are cutting off a piece of their hair and sending it to the UN, sending it to the Iranian officials at the UN too, to show them how nobody agrees with what they're doing and how that the global community is standing in solidarity with Iranian women and the people of Iran.
Yeah, I want to dive into that one. I didn't know about that one. That's cool. We're going to link the heck out of that one. We talked about the importance of outside witness, having access to actually see what's happening inside Iran right now, paying attention to it, because it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing for a violent regime to be exposed for being such violent dictators. But one of the things that you and I were talking about before we got rolling was what it means to the people protesting, what it means to the people living there to know that people are watching. Can we talk about that power of being seen for a minute?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the biggest things that I've been hearing from inside of Iran for the last few weeks is, please keep exposing what's happening. Please keep the spotlight on us and what we're doing and what the Islamic Republic has put us through for the last 43 years. Please share, please talk to as many media outlets as you can and disseminate accurate information about what life is like inside of the Islamic Republic, under the Islamic Republic. And it motivates them to see that there's people that are supporting them and celebrating them. Now, let's be honest too, they're literally putting their lives on the line. They're on the ground doing the fighting. So, you know, it might not be as impactful for them to see a celebrity post something, but it doesn't hurt. It helps keep the spotlight. And there was a tweet that a friend of mine posted, a journalist named Yashar, actually, and he mentioned how one of his friends told him, oh, you know, all these actresses that are foreign actresses that are going on camera and cutting their hair in solidarity, they're just doing it for attention. They don't really care about Iran. And he was like, I don't care if they don't care about Iran. The fact that they're doing it and bringing attention, we're going to love those actresses. We're going to support them. Musicians, we're going to buy their music. We're going to, you know, because they still took the time to show solidarity with something that's really important. And Iranians are very gracious, hospitable, warm people. We will not forget that you had our back. We're going to now forever have your back. So I actually agree with him. I don't care what your intentions are for doing it, as long as you do it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is, we're in the age of social media pressure, right? Where like people with cameras and people with access to big audiences, like the more we make those hashtags trend, the more the news outlets cover them, the more the politicians and the UN and governing bodies sort of wake up and they go, oh shit, we should probably do something. Whatever isn't within our power to do, we should probably get on the right side of the people. There is that weird thing, like even though I share as much as I can about the protests for that reason, to keep things trending and in the public eye and all of that stuff, it's also sort of, it's armchair activism, right? It costs me nothing to do that. My life is not on the line there, but it's not zero, right? I think in the face of any kind of atrocity, we feel really helpless. And that's true for like our local atrocities and global atrocities. Like we feel really helpless. And I think that's one of the reasons we click past it so quickly, right? I can't watch that. I can't watch that. It's too sad. There's nothing I can do. It's too depressing. It's too violent. I can't watch this.
Right.
And I get that. I do get that. When there is an easy action that definitely has a payoff, I think you should take it.
Yeah.
Right. There's not a lot of opportunity to do something that isn't a big risk for you, but has the potential to really make a difference. Like, share that stuff. Talk about that stuff. Tag your senators, tag your representatives, tag your news outlets. Like, it's like the easiest act of activism.
It is. And this is one moment in time where actually posting on social media and hashtagging actually does help our movement. One example of that that I've given is I did an Instagram takeover for Ellen DeGeneres a couple of weeks ago when we had the Global Day of Action for Iran. So there were protests planned in solidarity in 151 cities around the world. And it was on October 1st. And so I was at the LA one and their digital marketing team contacted me and said, we keep seeing this Mahsa Amini hashtag. Ellen is actually aware of what's going on and she's outraged by it. And I can't, one of the team members came across a couple of my videos and said, well, we thought we'd reach out to you to see if you're interested in, you know, giving our audience a glimpse into what's going on and showing what's happening at the rally. So that hashtagging and all of that worked to get the attention of her digital marketing team. And of course the media too, it's almost like shaming people into acting, you know, because they're like, well, if everybody's talking about this, I guess I got to say something about it.
Exactly.
So it does bring awareness. Tagging your local media helps too, because again, like you said, whatever the people are talking about and making trend is what the news is going to cover,
yeah,
which isn't always fair.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
I'm Megan Devine, and this is Hereafter. We've been talking with actor and writer Nazanin Noor on what you can do to help support the people of Iran. Let's get back to it. I want to talk a little bit more, actually, about how being seen boosts morale, right? We talked about this with the ritual of haircutting, which I think is fascinating. And I absolutely love that campaign. We're definitely going to link that in the show notes so that people know what's going on with that. Mm-hmm. But you and I were chatting before we got rolling. And I said that, you know, one of my books has been translated several times into Farsi. And since I've been posting about Iran, I'm getting the sweetest messages from people. Mm-hmm. Just so appreciative that I'm posting about it, that I, in a sense, do see them and I have some idea of what's happening. I'm not there. My skin isn't on the line. Like, my life isn't on the line. But it's important to speak about. And the sweetness, mm-hmm, in the messages that we're getting from that community about the power of being seen, and that not feeling alone in the world, as they so often have, not feeling alone in the world gives them the strength that they need to keep fighting and to keep pushing for what's right.
Yeah, I think it's very cool that you have a book translated into Persian. So that, congrats on that.
Thank you.
I think that, as I've said before to you, Iranians are very warm and hospitable and very kind and caring and thankful and appreciative. They love to show gratitude to someone who has done something good onto them, and they will reciprocate that tenfold. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you even did that and showed solidarity, those people are now going to be your fans forever, because they will remember that you stood up for them and stood by their side when they really needed it. So thank you for doing that. And I know they definitely appreciate it in Iran.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, our listenership knows this too. They know the power of being seen and how that kind of solidarity allows you to survive the things that you have to survive.
Right.
The crap of that, the violence of that, the pain and the suffering of that if somebody is surrounding you with love and bearing witness, it doesn't make all of that stuff okay, but it can very often give you what you need to show up for one more day of surviving it. And I think this is what I hope with this global outpouring that continues to happen, paying attention to what's happening in Iran, that people really feel that they're being seen so that they do have the power to keep on being the bodies on the line the way that they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to back up a little bit and talk a little bit about your life. Your parents left Iran in the mid-70s to come to graduate school in the U.S., and they saw what was happening in Iran with revolution in the late 70s, and they decided to stay here in the States. So this is kind of an oddly phrased question, but how was Iran present in your life as a kid growing up?
It was ever present. My parents got married in 1975, and then they came to the US to attend university. And the plan was always to go back after they got their degrees. And that was most Iranians' plans that came here in the 70s, pre-revolution. It not only did the revolution throw off their plans because they were waiting to see what happened, but then the Iran-Iraq war started. So there was just so much influx, so much change. And they thought, and their family back home also told them, my family, that you, especially since you have a daughter now, it's best for you guys to stay there. So they became Americans without ever having intended to, but it was ever present in my life. We were raised with Persian culture. I was being taught to speak Persian along with English as well. I was enrolled in Persian school, which is where I learned more culture, dance, history, language, reading and writing Persian. So we were raised with that culture. And one thing that my parents, and it's very prevalent among Iranians in the diaspora, is your parents always tell you, you're Iranian. You're not American. Okay. We're not raising you with American culture, whatever that means. It's you're Iranian through and through. So the families around us that we grew up with were Iranian. You know, some of our neighbors were from other immigrant or minority communities. So we were friends with them as well. But the bulk of the people that we were always with growing up were our Iranian friends and community that we had built with each other. So it was ever present. And I visited Iran a few times as well, which is beautiful and lovely and definitely helps you connect to your family and your culture on a deeper level.
Yeah. There's an article that you have out that, yes, we will link to. I'm going to read a pretty long quote, if that's okay with you, or a passage, if that's okay.
Sure.
So in this article, you wrote, "The guilt I feel for leaving unscathed, thanks to my country of birth, has never left me. Every time we'd fly out of Iran, I'd look out of the window at my motherland and cry. I'd cry because I missed my family terribly. I'd cry because I never had a guarantee to see them again. I'd cry for all the birthdays, the weddings, and the funerals I would never be able to attend, leaving me to celebrate and grieve from afar. I'd cry for all the people I was leaving behind to fend for themselves." So I wanted to bring that in to talk about how you see your own grief unfolding in what you're watching, and also what you see unfolding in your own Iranian American community watching what's happening in your homeland.
I can safely say that the diaspora community here in America is very traumatized for the last few weeks. Everybody is leaning on each other for support, and it's almost become, to be very blunt, very difficult to hang out or spend time with people that aren't in this community, because we understand that we have such a deep connection to it, and not everybody is going to be able to have that type of empathy and understand what we're feeling or what we're going through without actually talking to us on a deeper level. And I think a lot of people are a little bit more hands-off because they don't know how to approach it. And so we've all been kind of leaning on each other for support. Most of us have family and friends there. And so with the internet outages and just not always having the full picture of what's happening, people's safety, the crackdowns, it's really difficult. And you live kind of with this constant like anxiety, you know, nobody can put their phone down. We're just constantly like, everything we're doing is this and this, as we're cooking, as we're, you know, it's your phone is in your hand. And the moment you wake up, you know, I know, I'm sure maybe you've talked about this before, but it's healthy to kind of wake up, have a routine, breathe, maybe meditate, give some gratitude, not immediately go into your phone. We can't help it. If I get up at 6 a.m., maybe because I got to go pee, and usually I would go back to sleep, I'm like, you know what, let me let me make sure what's happening in Iran. What? And then you start seeing, I'm like, well, I can't go to sleep now. I got to figure out, I got to contact, I got to disseminate information. And I'm not saying that to get any type of sympathy or anything like that, but that's just what a daily routine is. And so we all feel this guilt. Of course, we feel, I can speak for myself. I feel guilty that I get to live here and grow up here. And I have cousins and family members that have, you know, lived under this oppression. And the only difference is that I just happened to be born here while my parents were in school and they didn't go back, you know? So, and I believe the quote you're referring to from that article was because I had my own run-ins with the morality police a couple times in Iran, and I was let go because my family stepped in and explained, oh, she's American. Oh, she didn't understand. We're so sorry. We'll make sure, you know, and you can pay them off sometimes too. So that's also a huge issue in Iran, is the economic disparity of who can get out of these things. If you want to compare it to in America, people get away with certain crimes because they have the means to, because they have the money to fight it and the power and the connections. And if you don't have that under the Islamic Republic as well, it's going to be worse off for you. So yeah, the guilt comes from, why do I get to leave unscathed? Why do I get to live here with freedom? And so it becomes really important to motivate you to always use your platform to raise the voices of your people, of anybody that's living under injustice. I'm a big human rights advocate, women's rights advocate, LGBTQ, anything, all the, you know, things that deserve attention, all the oppressed groups, all the minority groups, I'm always going to support. So of course I'm going to 100% go hard for my people.
Yeah. Thinking about the, oh my God, camaraderie of suffering is like the worst phrase ever, brain. Like, but I'm going to run with it for a second. Like the connection inside a shared experience,
right,
is one of the things you're talking about. And this is something that, you know, I hear from grieving people all the time, that they feel most comfortable with other grieving people, right? Especially if the loss was violent or unexpected or atypical, that we gravitate to people who understand us, and the rest of the world, as hard as they try, they don't get it. And sometimes that friction between the people who know and the people who don't know, yeah, that is really impossible to navigate.
It's a challenge. And I think I made peace with it very early and when this movement got started a few weeks ago, in that I don't expect certain people to understand things, and I'm going to lean on the people that do. And it's not to push anybody away, but because people that do come and ask questions and want to know, I will inform them. Of course, I'm happy to. And that's why I like making these short form informational videos as well, because people who aren't Iranian can come watch these and get some information quickly. And then they can go, you know, do their own research after that too, and hopefully read some more articles, watch some more pieces, and understand the gravity of the situation. Yeah, it's a challenge, because then there's part of me that also feels badly for my non-Iranian friends who I know are trying, or they mean well, or maybe they are really just hands off because they don't know what to do or say. But to that I say, anything is better than nothing. So trying to support in any way you can, or even asking your Iranian friends, what can I do to make you feel supported right now, would be great. Because I that happened to me twice just last night. And I said, hey, what you can do is you can post this, you can share this, you can get people to sign this petition, and tell your network to do the same thing. And that's a huge help. And I appreciate that. And they feel like, is that it? I can't do this. I can't send money. I can't. I'm like, no, actually, this really is helping, because it's keeping the spotlight on Iran. And again, it's educating the public on what's happening under the Islamic Republic to Iranians.
Yeah. I think something to underscore here, if you're listening to this, is don't be afraid to be awkward.
Right.
When you are checking in on somebody you care about, it is perfectly okay, in fact, preferable to doing nothing, but it's perfectly okay to say, I know that I don't understand what you're going through, and I'm here for you. Are there specific things that would feel useful and supportive to you right now? I'm happy to do them. Right. And also, you know, you haven't mentioned this. There's a necessary focus on, you know, post, keep the global spotlight on things, that kind of pressure, keep talking about it. Are there ways that you've felt sort of personally supported in all of this? Like, there is the necessary focus on global attention, keep the pressure up, don't let things go. But that is exhausting. Mm-hmm. It is exhausting, you know, for several reasons, some we didn't even touch on, but, you know, just being Iranian, being a woman, being away from home, having the guilt over, like, that could have been me if situation was just slightly different.
Right.
That is a lot. That's a lot for a person to take in. Are there things that you've found that are helping you continue to do that work? I guess is my very rambling way of asking that question.
Receiving messages from Iranians that are very supportive and just saying, hey, kind of like the messages you've gotten of support and gratitude from people of thank you, please keep doing this. You know, I don't personally need to get those messages in the sense of I'm going to do it regardless because it's important to me. And I want them, I want Iranians to have freedom finally after 43 years of oppression. But that stuff is nice to see every now and then when you feel like, is this helping? Am I helping? Am I doing anything? Is this actually making a dent in this movement? So when you receive these messages from inside of Iran of please keep going, everything of you guys are doing is helping, you know, that's a nice little boost. And I think our friends, we're all just kind of leaning on each other. We'll talk to each other. We'll vent about our feelings to each other. It helps that our parents understand, which is a whole other level of grief for them because a lot of them lived through the first one, the first revolution, the big revolution, 1979. And it's not actually the first revolution in Iran, but just the one that we're referring back to when it changed from a monarchy to a theocracy. Also, I think it's important to take a break to get fresh air. Just move your body around and keep yourself hydrated and well-fed as much as you can. So you can actually keep going and you can put your efforts towards doing the right thing.
Yeah. Tend the organism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You gotta tend to all of this so that you can actually have the motivation to continue the fight. Cause it's not a thing where we want it to just fizzle out where it's like, oh, well, I guess the change didn't happen as fast as we thought. So we're just going to stop. This is a revolution in the making, which means it's a slow burn.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a slow burn for 43 years. So,
right. You
know, like this isn't a, you know, a 1 week campaign with hashtags and then we get the desired result and we can move on. I wish it was that fast.
Right.
But this really does feel different this time.
It does. It's the most sustained that it's been. Mm-hmm. And we've seen, again, we saw oil workers. We've seen people at petrochemical plants that are joining in on strikes.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing shop owners that have joined in on strikes, students that are joining in and have joined in on strikes, professors, you know, so the more that those things happen, the more that the movement gains steam and momentum. And there's a feeling of solidarity and unity inside of Iran as well, not just with the Iranians outside of Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's not stopping. The protests are not stopping and they are worse than you see on TV. There's a lot of accounts from inside of Iran that we're not even seeing all of it because how can we? The internet gets shut off. The internet gets throttled. People can't send everything. There was just I don't know if you saw, Evin prison in Iran is Iran's most notorious prison. They put political prisoners, dissidents, environmental activists, journalists, lawyers, human rights attorneys, artists, students are held there. And it's the worst place to be. And there was a fire there just a few nights ago, and it was the biggest news story. And there's videos where you see two little, I don't know what they are, so I can't say, but they look like little missiles or little something with that exploded once it hit the target in the prison. And we still don't have the full story of what happened there because not everyone was allowed to call out to their families and tell them they're okay. When the regime has told us a death count before, we know that it's higher than what it is. So first state TV reported 4 deaths. Then they reported 40 after a correction, and then they went back down to 4. So 4 and 40, that's a huge disparity. Which one is it? Then they said, well, the fire was started amongst prisoners in this ward, but then gunshots were heard in videos and tear gas was used. And prisoners are trying to give us accounts of what happened. And none of it, we don't know which one is accurate. We definitely don't believe the information coming out of the Islamic Republic, but we still can't get the full story from the people inside and the people that were in Evin as well. So we're still trying to figure out what's going on with that and how many people are actually dead.
Yeah. And how many people detained and suffering and family members being concerned.
Confinement, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And the thuggery involved there. One of the young women who was murdered last week, I believe, I was reading a story that they said, oh, she fell out of a window. And her mother was like, she didn't fall out of a damn window. She was at a protest. Ago. Yeah, a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And the story that I was reading the other day was that some of her family members had been pressured by the regime to sign on to the official story. And like, you know, thugs operate the way that thugs always operate is like, if you don't say what we want you to say, we will kill the people you care about. And that sort of threat of violence is very powerful and very effective. So this is why, if you're like, but how can there be all of these different accounts? Well, violent power wants to stay in power by any means necessary. Right.
And that young woman's name that you're referring to is Nika Shahkadami. And she went out into one of the protests. One of her last texts to her friend, I believe it was that the security forces were after her. So she was trying to evade them. And then next thing we know, 10 days later, mm-hmm. her family found out that her body was being held in a morgue, in a police station, I believe it was. And they were only allowed to see it for a brief second to be able to identify her. And then the authorities told her mother that, she threw herself off of a building. None of it makes sense. All of a sudden, everybody, every child in Iran, the excuses they've given have ranged from this one committed suicide. This one had a pre-existing condition. A young boy just a few days ago was shot with bullets, with live ammunition and died as a result. The story that they told the public was he was bitten by a dog and he got infected from that dog bite and he didn't get it treated and he perished. I mean, if it wasn't so enraging and infuriating and absolutely absurd, it's comical, the reasons that they give for these deaths. And so, you know, where's the UN and the human rights groups to be able to, and I know there's people that are working on certain things and petitions. There's actually a huge petition that I have in my Instagram bio as well that we're trying to get signed. It's for creating an investigative mechanism by the UN to look into crimes against humanity committed by the Islamic Republic, but it would also serve to punish regime officials connected with the recent uprising and to be able to put travel bans on them so they can't go back and forth freely to the US and Europe, for example, and to find their offshore accounts and assets and freeze those as well.
Yeah. Hold people accountable for the grief and suffering that they have perpetuated for 43 years and continue to do so as long as they're allowed to. I mean, that sounds kind of overly simplistic, but violence is allowed to continue when it's allowed to continue.
And it's one of the things that we hear coming outside of Iran of people asking us, please pressure your elected officials, specifically in the United States for me, because I'm American, please pressure President Biden and his administration and elected officials to not negotiate with the Islamic Republic to revive the JCPOA, which is the nuclear deal. That's one of the biggest things, because the Iranians feel like this will only serve to embolden the regime. It's not going to actually affect helping the people. We don't want that to happen. No discussions regarding what to do on Iran should include reviving that nuclear deal.
Yeah, we don't want those people having access to bigger weaponry than they've already got. Yeah, definitely. So there are a lot of actions that people can take. We're going to link to all of them in the show notes. You're always going to see me posting about this stuff on social media, everybody. These really are simple actions that we can take in the face of atrocity. And there's just like violence after violence after violence after violence all around the globe. And it really is overwhelming. And feeling like there isn't anything we can do, like collapsing into that despair, while valid, not really helpful in getting the world that we want. And taking the actions that you can take on behalf of goodness and right and freedom and being human and all of those things, like these actions, it's okay if some of them are easy, right? Because as we've been talking about, they do have a really big impact, and easy stuff that has a big impact, I'm here for all day long. So, go.
I was going to say, just to everybody that is a feminist who believes in human rights and equality for all and for all oppressed people, to please get involved and stand by the side of the Iranian people.
Yeah. I actually want to touch on something real quick. I was just about to do our closing question, but bringing that up, I know early in the protest, there were some posts that were circulating that were saying, like, what's happening to women and girls in Iran is, you know, on the extreme end of the spectrum of what's happening with reproductive justice and access in the States, and sort of gathering all of the people together who care about women's rights and feminism. And I know there was some pushback to say, hold on, hold up, hold up, hold up. Like, don't conflate these two. draw focus away from what's happening in Iran to sort of lump it together with the fight for reproductive justice and access and rampant misogyny in other places in the world, US, looking at you. The thing that gets a little bit complicated for me is we don't tend to take action on things unless it's somehow personal. Like, not good, not bad. It's just like, that's how humans work. Like, if you don't know about it and it doesn't touch you, you don't act on it. And I wonder if there is, and I honestly, I don't know the answer to this question. Is there a way to rally the people who believe in the causes of feminism, who believe in queer rights, who believe in reproductive access, who believe in toppling systemic racism? Like, is there a way to enfold us in the current global action to protect Iran in a way that doesn't co-opt what's happening in Iran?
Well, that's a great question. And I've used the terms bodily autonomy and a woman's right to choose, specifically knowing that that would catch the attention of progressives and liberals and feminists. I'm a liberal myself, so I know that that's a key word. It's a buzzword. And I know it can turn on that sympathy or empathy factor for women and feminists around the world. You know, you don't have to be a woman to be a feminist, to get them to understand and pay attention. I also did personally have just an issue with the conflating of the two, because yes, they're both issues. The right to choose and bodily autonomy for what to wear are in the similar vein. But the difference is women in Iran are getting murdered for not complying with certain rules, with not complying with mandatory hijab. And in America, I can go out and scream about being pro-choice all I want. If I wanted to, I could go get an abortion and no one's going to come murder me for it. You know, I'm not going to get detained. Well, now and
now,
now you can get detained. So not that part, but I'm not getting murdered for it is my point.
Right.
So I think the difference is we have to understand that while they're in a similar, under a similar umbrella, yes, but in Iran, they're under oppression. They're under a theocracy. Whatever we say here, where we know that there are certain people, whether it's in lawmakers, officials on the Supreme Court that are trying to push their own religious conservative agenda. Yes, but America still is not run as a theocracy. Iran, the Islamic Republic is. And so that's a big difference. If that's what gets people on board, great. Use that analogy. That's fine. But when discussing it too, I would love for people to understand that what the women of Iran face is much different than the women of America, in the sense of a woman's testimony is worth 50% of a man's in court. Women can't go to football stadiums or sports stadiums to watch teams play. They're not allowed. They can't sing in public. They can't wear what they want. If they want to get a divorce, they have to go through so much in an Iranian court and an Islamic Republic court to have that done. Custody immediately goes to the man. They need permission to travel. It's just so much that's a burden that's placed upon them. They really cannot actually live with their full freedom. So it is different than here. But if that brings people together with empathy, great. We can use that analogy.
Yeah. So let's use that empathy and that outrage as a starting point. And as we're talking about this publicly and socially in whatever ways we can, to remember to center the women of Iran and the children of Iran and the people who believe in bodily autonomy and freedom and the overthrow of a violent, oppressive regime.
Yeah.
So use whatever you need to do to get yourself to the party. And when you arrive at the party, remember to center the people on the ground who are living it.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that. I love that. Now we can end with my question that I'm closing every episode with. So with everything that you know, so reaching way back in everything you know about your Persian culture, about the revolutions that you and your family have seen, what you've lived through, and what you know of your own Iranian American communities and your friends, all of those whole things put together, knowing what you know, what does hope look like for you right now?
Hope is watching the Iranian people on the ground in their fight and how they're not backing down and they're not giving up. And that gives me hope and strength to continue for them. Because if they're actually risking their lives, literally risking their lives, the least I can do is continue to be loud for them from over here.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. I mean, that is functional hope, right? It's not, I hope everything works out okay and all of this stuff. It's like right here in this moment, what does that hope look like?
And I'm taking their lead.
Yeah.
So they're fighting, they're continuing, they're not backing down. They're, you know, these are schoolgirls that are taking off their headscarves in front of police, in front of undercover police, their principals, their teachers, they're out in public, they're on the streets, they're ripping up pictures of the supreme leader Khamenei and one of the leaders of the Islamic Revolution, the Ayatollah Khomeini, who is dead. And these are all crimes that could carry very harsh sentences, and they're doing it. So, you know, if a 15-year-old girl can go do that, the least I can do is my part from here. And that gives me hope, is that the youth is not giving up.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to do a lot of calls to action in the show notes. And when we promote this episode, we're going to list a lot of the things you talk about. Are there 3 to 5 things that you want people to do, actions you want them to take, petitions you want them to know about?
They can sign the amnesty petition for the UN investigative mechanism. The petition that's coming about to kick Iran off of the Commission on the Status of Women is not ready yet, but people should keep their eye out for it, because I'm going to also help do a push when that happens. They should put pressure on their elected officials to find regime officials that live in the US, for example, and to revoke their visas and not allow them to travel here any longer, and to freeze any assets that they have in America. They can also keep pressure on the Biden administration to not revive this nuclear deal with Iran, with the Islamic Republic. And they can keep sharing and posting to keep amplifying the voices of the people of Iran.
Excellent. And we will put links to all of those things in show notes. I'm so glad we got to do this together today.
Me too. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much. All right. Stay tuned, everybody. We will be back with your questions to carry with you in just a sec.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Each week, I leave you with some questions to carry with you until we meet again. Now, we cut out a lot of it in post-production, but you can definitely hear me choking up a bunch of times in this episode. It even took me a million takes just to get through the introduction without crying. This episode was really emotional and moving for me, and I hope it touched you too. So for me personally, something I'm carrying with me from this episode is that our actions do matter. And that in the face of oppression, in the face of suffering, even when it's a whole world away, our sustained attention is what's called for. That sustained attention is a powerful tool for change and a powerful act of solidarity. And bearing witness is something we talk about a lot in the grieving community. That power of being seen, of feeling like you're not alone in whatever you're living through, it really does make a difference, even in situations of life and death, as we're seeing in Iran. What parts of the conversation stuck with you today? Were there parts of the show that made you think or cry, like I do all the time? Were there parts of this episode that made you feel, I don't know, a bit more likely to take action for Iran, for women, life, and freedom? Everybody's going to take something different from today's show, but I hope you found something to hold on to. And I hope you take that out into the world. and I hope you tell me about it when you do. Check out Refuge and Grief on Instagram or HereAfterPod on TikTok to see video clips from the show and leave your thoughts in the comments on those posts. When you post about this episode or any episode of Hereafter on social media, make sure that you tag me at Refuge and Grief on the social media channels and use the hashtag HereAfterPod, whatever platform you're on. That's the way that we hear what you're saying. All of us, the whole team, we really do love to see where this show takes you and the conversations and the actions that come out of it. If you want to tell us directly how today's show felt for you, or you have a request or a question for upcoming explorations of difficult things, give us a call at 323-643-3768 and leave a voicemail. If you missed it, you can find the number in the show notes or visit megandevine.co. If you'd rather send an email, you can do that too, right on the website, megandevine.co. We want to hear from you. I want to hear from you. This show, this world, needs your voice. Together we can make things better, even when they can't be made right. Now, speaking of togetherness, I would love to get a whole lot more people listening to this show, not just this episode, but the show in general. More people listening means more people feeling brave enough to start these kinds of conversations about difficult things in their own lives. And as we know, I am a big fan of changing the world via conversations about the things we don't really talk about. Yeah, we'll leave it at that. You can help start those conversations by getting more people to listen, and you can do that by sharing the show on your social media channels, telling your friends about it, sharing it with your coworkers. You could even treat it like a book club, which is a really cool idea, like get your friends together to listen to the show every week and discuss the themes in each week's show. That would be really cool, and if I had more time, I would organize it. So if you organize it, be sure to let me know. And then there's one more thing you can do to help other people find Hereafter. Leave a review. Reviews help convince people to take a risk and hit play in their podcast app when they see the show. If you say that Hereafter is a cool place to be and has cool things you need to listen to, then Hereafter is a cool place to be. Plus, I love reading your reviews, so, you know, you can do it for me too. Want more Hereafter? Grief education doesn't just belong to end-of-life issues. As my dad says, daily life is full of everyday grief that we don't call grief. And as we heard in today's show, grief is behind many, many of our global headlines. Learning how to talk about all that without cliches or platitudes or shutting down, that's an important skill for everybody. Especially if you're in any of the helping professions. And I want to say, if you are in one of the helping professions, be sure to check the link in the show notes to register for my upcoming intensive training, Rehumanizing Grief. It is a 6-month program that starts this December 2022. You do have to sign up for it soon, though, because spots are limited to just 48 people. So find all of the information on that training, other professional resources, and my best-selling book, It's Okay That You're Not Okay, at megandevine.co. Don't stick an extra M on the end of that. We couldn't get that one. megandevine.co. Hereafter with Megan Devine is written and produced by me, Megan Devine. Executive producer is Amy Brown, co-produced by Elizabeth Fazio, with logistical and social media support from Micah, edited by Houston Tilley, music provided by Wavecrush, and background noise this Halloween season was provided by somebody in my neighborhood making what sounds like giant metal fingernails scratching against a giant metal chalkboard sounds slowly and intently in the background of the whole show.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.